Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Ayin Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, what are your personal volume of this maseches? Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top. In our previous shiur, we were discussing the issue of a broken bone of an animal that protrudes outwards and the effects that that has on the kashrus. We continue in that spirit, 8 lines from the top. Hahu nishbar ho'etzem v'yotza l'chutz. There was a case of a leg bone that protruded outwards. The ishtakil kurtisa minei. There was removed from the bone a little piece. A little piece apparently fell off this protruded bone. Also, the kamei d'Abaye. The case came to Abaye, and he did not have an immediate answer regarding this. Shaihe t'losa rigli. He delayed the case, or kept the case by him, for the passage of 3 holidays. During the holiday season, the Talmidei Chachamim used to get together, and it was an opportunity to pose questions and get a response from the Talmud scholars. Amarle Rav Ado bar Matona. Rav Ado says to the owner of the animal, Zil kamei de rova brei de Rav Yosef bar Chama de Charifa Sakine. Why don't you take this question to the famous Rava? This Rava that's featured here is the Rava that is very popular throughout the Shas, referred to in general just as Rava. Take it to him, because he is Harifa Sakine. Rashi explains, Lev Posuach Lo Besvara. He's very broad-minded and analytical. Broad-minded in the sense that he has a great deal of Talmudic and analytic abilities. It's worth noting that Rava is found throughout the Shas with different ideas regarding Torah education. In many different Gemaras, he's featured as having a particular stance and opinion regarding to how one should go about learning. One of the particularly outstanding cases or examples of that is Rava found in Daf on Daf Yud Tes Omid Aleph in Maseches Avodah Zorah, where Rava advises that one should cover a lot of ground in his learning, in his learning of Talmud, before he embarks on the process of analysis. And it's mentioned there that he should go through all of the Shas until the Girsas HaTalmud is shogru b'fiv, until he has great deal of clarity in the Talmud, and only after that should he start analyzing in greater depth. And there's another comment of Rava's over there that says he should study, even if he forgets, and even if he doesn't receive a sufficient explanation from his source of learning, from his Rav. Nevertheless, he should keep on going until he has a certain level of fluency and familiarity, and then embark on analysis. And you see that this very Rava is described as one who is quite advanced in his svara, in his analytical abilities. So it's something to ponder that maybe that's the way to go. Of course, when it comes to success in learning, it's very important for one also to have a sense of satisfaction from his learning, because only with that will he be motivated to continue. So educators have to take into consideration other, we'll call it the human factors when considering the matter. But as far as sources are concerned, we've just mentioned, in addition to what we see, how Rava is described over here, we see one of the many places that he gives counsel in how to go about learning, and that's referred to in Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph in Maseches Avodah Zarah. Continuing in the Gemara, also the kame. So the owner of the animal comes with his case of the protruding bone animal that he has, and Omar and Rava said, Michti, let's look into this. Nishbar ho'etzem v'yotze l'chutz tnan. The Mishnah makes reference to a broken bone that's protruding outwards. Mali nofal, mali isei. What difference does it make whether a little piece of bone fell off or the bone is there fully intact? Once you have the skin and meat covering rove of the break, it is kosher. Amale Ravina l'Rava. Here there are a series of questions regarding the meat that covers the break. Mislaket mahu, misroises mahu, mismasmes mahu. Let's glance at Rashi for explaining these different cases. Mislaket mahu, Rashi says, Bosor hanoiser lechasos haroiv, the meat that remains on the break to cover the majority of the break, which was a point we discussed in our last shiur. Eino yachad. In this case, the meat is not in one continuum, one concentrated place over the break. Elo kan me'at v'kan me'at soviv ho'etzem. A little piece of meat here and a little piece of meat there. V'im titzarfehu. If you add up all of these little sections of meat that are attached to the break, hare roiv hekefo nichse, then you will have rove of the circumference of the bone, in fact, covered. But the issue here is it's not one continuum. Is that considered an effective covering? The next Rashi, misroises mahu, shoyo habosor merudod v'kolush v'choyfe es roiv ho'etzem. The meat that is covering the bone is thin, and a thin, weak kind of covering. Is that sufficient? And then you have the third case of mismasmes mahu. The flesh or the meat that remains is rotting. So now the Gemara asks, Hechi domi mismasmes. What is described, or how do you categorize this case? Omar of Huna re de Rav Yoshua, kol sheha reifei koidroi. It's a level of rotting of meat that's on this live animal with the broken protruding bone that a doctor, veterinarian, would cut away. Ibaya laho, nikev mahu, nisdak mahu, niklaf mahu, nitel shlish hatachtoi mahu. Once again, you see a series of questions regarding the meat that's covering that break. So let's in this case as well, let us make reference to the Rashi to explain the cases. Nikev, Rashi says, Ibayaloho, Nikev oisoi bosor hachoife, the meat that's covering the break that we have learned already in the past that's necessary to make it a kosher situation. Nevertheless, the meat that's covering it, there is a nekev koton below chisaram. There's a hole in the meat that's covering the rove of the bone, and there's nothing missing, though. It's a type of penetration, or like a pin that penetrates and doesn't cause any loss. Is that considered a problem, the fact that the section of meat that's covering the break has a hole in it? Nistak is a crack in the meat that's there for the covering. Niklaf, Rashi explains, Niklaf me'al ho'etzem, oisoi bosor ha'choife, ve'eno dovuk bo'etzem mahu. There is meat that's covering it, however, it's not attached to the bone. Im timsiloma niklaf below chisoron bosor kosher, if you say that the case of niklaf without anything missing, simply it's the meat is not attached to the bone. If you say Now, that is kosher. We're raising it as a question, but Rashi leads into the next case, that if you say that the case of niklaf, where there's a flap of meat that's covering the break, but it's not attached to the bone, it's not adhering to the bone, and that is okay, that's considered a sufficient covering. The next question is, nital shlish hatachton. Rashi explains, nital shlish hatachton, there has been removed the bottom third of the layer of meat that's covering the break, shel uvi habosar, somuch le'etzem, harei shnei shlish el yoinim oimdim ba'avir, mahu. There's a space between the flesh that's covering the bone and the bone itself, the break in the bone. What is the halacha then? So the Gemara answers, Toshma, this is a response to one of the questions. In fact, the last question will be featured in this response. Di Omar Ula, Amar Rav Yochanan, or Harei Hu Kebosar. Or his skin is like Bosar. Now, the feeling here is that the or is covering the break, and there is no meat. There's just the or. So that that would indicate that there is a gap between the or, which is a superficial, a surface phenomenon, and the bone, which is usually covered with meat. So here you have, all you have is the or is covering it. So that would indicate that if this is a good covering, because or is treated like basar, then certainly the case of nital shlish hatachton would be okay. The Gemara says, no, you can't bring a raya from this halacha. Dilma dekona mashchodidei. Dekona has to do with hardened. Rashi explains on the second line under the Gemara, Dilma hasam dekona mashchodidei. Shehichsik ha'or b'shaloi. That the skin has taken hold. Klomar hasam lav benital habosar mitachtov or oimei ba'avir komar. That, the case of the or that Rabbi Yochanan mentioned, or Hareu Kebosar, serving as a good covering or protection, is not a case where there's a flap of skin with a gap between it and the bone. But rather, Elo Kegoin Shenishbar Ho'etzem B'Shipuloi Shehu Orum Mibosar Somuch La'arkuva. We're talking about a break in the leg bone on the lower part of the leg, a part at which there really is no meat in the first place. It's very thin, the leg becomes very thin at that point, and it's orum mibosar somuch la'arkuva, she'en shom ela or. At that point in the animal, there's in fact only skin. V'ha'or dovuk yofe ba'etzem u'machziko, and the skin is clinging very firmly over there and keeps the bone in place. So that might very well be what Rabbi Yochanan was referring to, and hence it can't serve as a case of nital shlish hatachton, or serve as an answer to that particular question. Because here, the case Rabbi Yochanan is saying, or harei kebosar, is where the skin is really clinging unto the bone to begin with. Omar Rav Ashi, continuing in the Gemara, ki havinon be Rav Popi ibayalon. When we were learning in the yeshiva of Rav Popi, the question came upon us. We asked, nikdar kemin tabaas mahu. To appreciate what the question is, let's glance at the Rashi on the fourth line under the Gemara. Nikdar habosar besakin me al hashever beigul kemin tabaas v'rov hekefo mechuse. The skin, or the flesh, the meat that's covering the break, is, in fact, rove of the break is, the circumference of the break is surrounded by meat. However, a ring has been cut into that meat that is serving as a cover of the break. So that's nikdar kemin tabas, a cut in the meat itself in a ring shape. What is the halacha? Does that diminish the effectiveness of the meat that's covering the break? Upashatno mehol di Omar of Yehuda Marav, and Ravashi is telling us the story, so he says, I resolved it from that which Rav Yehuda Marav says. Dovar zeh shalti l'chachamu rofim v'omru. this question was posed to the wise men and to the doctors, and they said, "Misartoi be'etzim umale aruka." You take a bone material, not the bone of the break, but some outside piece of bone, and you misarto is scratch the meat. Scratch the meat, and it will cause it to possibly it'll cause it to bleed a little bit, and it will be activating its remedial its remedy capacity. And mala aruka means it will then like regenerate, if you will, and get better. Aval parzala, but as far as this scratching is concerned, using parzala metal, mizraf zorif, that causes inflammation, and therefore not to. In order to activate this remedy or regeneration of the flesh, don't do the scratching with metal. Amrav Papa, Vahu Dekona Garmo Didei. Rashi says, Vahu Dekona Garmo Didei, She'anu Royim She'etzim Machzik B'Shaloi Svivois HaKedera Midbak Ho'etzim LaBosar. This is a reliable method of assuring health or kashrus, provided you see that the bone is adhering to the surrounding meat. V'simen hascholas alus arukahu. The fact that the meat is clinging to the bone at that area, that's a sign that it's already in the process of getting better. If the sugya seems to be lacking a certain degree of clarity, that can be remedied by having a book of illustrations, as we have been recommending in the past throughout this Masichta, primarily in these sections of Gemara that are very much dependent on we'll say hands-on experience or seeing this up close. And if one is not in an actual slaughterhouse situation, which many of us are not, the next best thing is having a book of detailed illustrations, and we've been recommending the book Sichas Chulin on Maseches Chulin, authored by Amitai Ben David. The Mishnah. Hashochet es habehema umotzo bo shilya. One slaughters an animal and finds in it the shilya. The shilya is the placenta. It's that tissue matter or organic material that hosts or that surrounds a developing fetus. Nefesh hayofe toichlena. Someone who is not repulsed by things that others find detestable. So that's a nefesh hayofe toichlena. He can eat it. The eino mitama. The shilya is not classified as regular meat or as food, and therefore it does not absorb tumas oichlin. That's tuma that's associated with food. And if, let us say, the animal died and you found inside of it a shilya, that would not communicate tumas nevelos. In other words, it's different than the rest of the meat of the animal. It wouldn't communicate tumas nevelos, just like the horns of a dead animal do not communicate tumas nevelos, as well as the hooves, etc. Chishev oleho, if one planned to eat the shilya, in other words, in his mind, he is considering it as food. Metama tumas oichlin, avoloi tumas nevelos. The thought that one has, the plan that one has in considering it food, does render it subject to tumas oichlin. However, it doesn't make it into meat per se, and therefore tumas nevelos remains apart, remains distant. It's not subject to tumas nevelos. We should mention tumas nevela is the tuma that's communicated by the carcass of an animal that obviously has not been slaughtered, and tuma is communicated through touch or through carriage of the nevela. Shilya shiotsa miksosa asura ba'achila. If you have a shilya that emerged partially from an animal, and then you, let us say, slaughter the animal, so that shulya is osur to eat. Simin vlad b'isha, v'simin vlad b'vehema. In the case of a human being, the shulya is an indication that there is a child. And in the case of an animal, the shulya is an indication that there is a behema. So that you have a situation that the shulya that came out might have in it the an embryo that it may have decomposed or dissolved, but nevertheless it's considered a birth. And as a result of that, this shulya is considered to be to have been born, so to speak, and is not going to be included in the shechita of the mother. There is a Rashi that says asura b'achila v'afagav delo nafak ela purta, even though only part came out, v'leko lemeimar kol michui havlad hoya bo hoya sham, and you wouldn't say that all of the dissolved embryo is in that little part that emerged. However, shema ba'oisa mixas yotzo roish havlad, it could be in that little part that came out was the head of the fetus. The hare hu kiolud, and as a result of that, it's considered as if it has been born. The emergence of the head is considered birth. So that is the case over here as well. Continuing in the Mishnah, hamevakeres, mevakeres from the word bechor, firstborn, hamevakeres shipil shilya, the mother emitted, miscarried a shilya, a placenta. Yashlicheno leklovim. It is, it can be thrown to the dogs. In other words, even though in general a firstborn male animal is considered holy, it's considered a bechor, it's given to a kohen and brought to the Beis Hamikdash. In this case, the majority of possibilities are that it's not a bechor. A bechor is relevant to a healthy male birth. If you have a creature, for example, that is, first of all, if you have a female birth, so right away that's not b'kedushas bechor. And there's other types of birth, even if it's not a female, but it's a male, but we'll call it a strange looking male child or male animal birth, it too will not have kedushas bechor, leaving as a minority of possibilities a healthy male birth. Only those having kedushas bechor, this case, since it's not a healthy male birth, it's the majority of chances are that it's something that does not have bechor sanctity to begin with, and therefore you can give it to the dogs. However, uve mukdoshim tikover, if you have a shulya birth of an animal, let's say that has been dedicated as a sacrifice, for example, a korban shlomim could be a female animal. Therefore, the likelihood of this being something that had sanctity to it as an offspring of a sacrifice, that is in the majority, and therefore the shulya that came out has to be buried. The ein kovrin oso b'parshas drachim, you don't bury it at a crossroads. The ein tolin oso b'ilon, nor does one hang the shulya on a tree, because those practices are mitnei darkei hamori. Those are practices that the Amorites, reference to the Gentile population that occupied Eretz Yisrael before the Yidden came in. This term Amori has been expanded to all practices that are of I will call a magic type nature, non-healthful, non-remedy related. And practices like that, the Torah forbids. And that's based on the pasuk that Rashi quotes, v'lo sa'aseh kima'asehem. Therefore, these witchcraft-like practices are forbidden. Minohani mili, tetona rabbonan. we are looking for a source regarding that source for the halacha featured in the Mishnah regarding the shilya. We mentioned that if you slaughtered an animal and found inside of it a shilya, you can eat it. So the Mishnah also mentioned if part came out before the animal was shechted, you at that point then cannot eat it. So the Gemara is asking for sources regarding those teachings. Mino hani mili de tonu rabbanan kol behema tochelu la rabois es hashilya. The pasuk says you can eat all of the animal. That comes to include the placenta. Yochol afilu yotza miksasa. Does that include a case where even part came out? Talmud lomar oisa. Oisa velo shilyasa. The animal you can eat and not its shilya. So you have, on the one hand, the shilya is included, and on the other hand, it's excluded. So this comes to indicate that where there's a partial emergence, that would be forbidden. The Gemara now asks, Michti, ein shilya below vlad. It's known that you don't have a placenta unless there is a unless there is an offspring, a child, a birth. Lomali kra. What do I need a pasuk to tell me the lo shilyasa? We mentioned osa, and osa is an exclusionary expression, excluding the shilya. What do I need a pasuk for? It would seem to be obvious, being that maybe there is a vlad there, and it's therefore considered a birth. And as such, the shechita of the mother would not cover it. It doesn't cover that which is already born. The Gemara answers, Kro asmachta bi'almo. The truth is, I don't need the pasuk to exclude the case of the partial emerged shilya. The role of the pasuk is to teach me something else. And Rashi makes a reference to that. This is it, things that we've learned already. The case where one cut away the tol or kloyos. These are internal, specific internal organs of an animal before it was shechted, and then you slaughtered the animal. Those internal organs that you disconnected from their point of attachment inside the animal, those are forbidden. As far as our topic is concerned, the use of the pasuk here is only as a we'll call it asmachto, a point, a reference point, but not an actual source. Sometimes we term the asmachta as a means of remembering the idea. But the real role of this pasuk is for that which we mentioned and is quoted in the Rashi, the cut away tol and kloyos. The eino mitama. Our Mishnah said that the shilya itself is not mitama tumas oichlin. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading in the outside margin, and that's under the word no say. In our Shas Ozer, the marked Gemaras that appear on your screen, we feature topic headings and structural notes when necessary. Here, under our no say heading, we've written Or Chamor Shesholkoi, donkey skin that has been boiled up. Legabi Tumas Oichlin and Legabi Tumas Nevelos. We want to know, investigate this regarding the boiled skin and its ability to become considered food with regard to food-related tumah, and is it considered nevela? Nevela is something characteristic of the carcass of an animal, and in this case we're talking about a donkey. The question itself is featured as a long question. You can see we have a shin indicating a she'elah with a descending vertical dashed line that continues down Omid Bey's number of lines, about 8 lines down, all this material forming the question. We can point out already ahead of time that the question, the heart of the question itself, is actually much shorter than that, because you will see on Omid Bey's a bracketed section that really serves to present the background information that's alluded to by the basic question. So let us continue. Boy Rav Yitzchok bar Nafcha, or Chamor Shesholkoi Mahu. donkey skin that has been cooked. Rashi says shoko is cooked up extensively. Mahu, what is the halacha? So if you're asking the question, the Gemara itself wants to clarify lamai regarding what are you asking. E l'tumas oichlin, if you're asking with regard to the context of tumas oichlin, you don't really have to ask the question. Tanina, that has been taught already. E l'tumas nevelos, tanina, if your question is with regard to tumas nevela, that too has been taught in a Tanaic source. So there is really no reason for asking a question for covering issues that have been taught already in early Tanaic sources. At this point, you see we have a bracketed section and a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating the line at which this question ends. Following the brackets, the Gemara will tell us that even though we have learned about Tumas Oichlin, and in the source that's cited regarding cooked skin, the source teaches us that Or Shesholko, and you can even see this with the markings on the third line from the top, a dashed underlined Or Shesholko expression, and it says the line under that Metame Tumas Oichlin. So, as we mentioned, this really was taught already. Nevertheless, that source doesn't answer our question, and that the Gemara will explain after the brackets why it doesn't answer our question by saying le'olam tumas oichlin, the question that Rav Yitzchok raised at the bottom of Omed Aleph. Rav Yitzchok Bar Nachos had a question, was with regard to tumas oichlin, and even though the source said that or shishoko boiled skin could lead to tumas oichlin, v'shayni or chamor demoyis, the donkey skin is different than standard animal skin in that it, in general, is disgusting. So that it could be, because of this mius factor, even though it's cooked up a lot and spices are added, it nevertheless doesn't lead to tumas oichlin. Let us now go over the entire Gemara with the necessary background. We mentioned the question had been regarding donkey skin that was cooked up. What is the halacha? And the Gemara itself asks, well, is your question with regard to the realm of Tumas Oichlin? Well, that we already have information. If your question is regarding Nevelos, regarding that we also have information. So now the Gemara at the top line in the bracket says, Tumas Oichlin, we know already. Disanya, Ha'or, Vashilya, the skin, and the placenta, ein metam and tumas oichlin, as they are, without any treatment, are not metam and tumas. So they're not considered food. Or shishalkei, if you have skin that you boiled up, v'hashilya shechishev aleha, and placenta that you planned to eat, metamin tumas oichlin. So you see that the issue of tumas oichlin is already addressed in this source. So the Gemara feels that, well, that wouldn't have been Rav Yitzchok Nafcho's question. Tumas nevelos nami tanina. As far as tuma communicated by carcasses, and as far as skin is concerned, that also is taught in a source. The source says benivlosa velo beor. The communication of tuma is accomplished through contact or carriage of the carcass, but not the skin. Velo ba'atzamos, not bones. Velo ba'gidin, not sinews. Velo ba'karnayim, not through contact with horns. Velo ba'tzalafayim, nor with hooves. The Omar Rabo bar Ravchana lo nitzurcha elo shason tzike kedera. This exclusion from Tumas Nevela, this mute, this exclusion, Rashi explains, it's very clear that it's not basar. It's very clear that these are not, it's not meat of the carcass, and it's pretty obvious that they're not subject to Tumas Nevela. So what do you need the pasuk for? And so Rabbi Barav Chona says, Lo nitzurcha elo shason tzike kedera. It's a case where he made these things, let us focus right now on the skin, he made it into a tzike kedera. Rashi explains he cooked it up a lot with spices. It's beginning to sound like maybe some cynical people say the way they make hot dogs. Well, who knows what they put into sausage and into salamis, but we know that it's a lot of spices are added to whatever meat substance is there. But that aside, something is being described here where you take these, we'll call animal byproducts, even though they're not meat, process them extensively with spices, and even so, even though they seem to come close to looking like meat, nevertheless, the pasuk excludes them from the realm of tumas nevela. So, after all is said and done, we seem to have covered all tracks or all possibilities of what the question may have been. So, the issue is, why do I need to ask a question regarding the boiled donkey skin when it seems when the questions would have been covered by these sources? So the Gemara answers why Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Nafcha is asking his question. The Oilom Tumas Oichlin. Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Nafcha is focusing on the issue of donkey skin and its ability to be considered food with regard to Tuma. If you said, well, that we had that mentioned above, that it does become Ochlin, not necessarily so over here. The shiny or chamor, the case of the donkey skin is different. The mois, it's disgusting. As a result of that, it could be that it does not become tomei tumas Ochlin, even though it has been cooked up quite so extensively, making it food-like. Shilya shiotasa. The Mishnah said, if shili shosa miksasa, asura b'achila. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a nosei mivneh heading, an attempt to offer a topic heading and structural note to assist in understanding this piece of Gemara. So in the outside margin, you see we have a nosei mivneh, a Roman numeral 1 and 2 are featured, as they appear in the Gemara, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. These represent Shnei Lishonois, two versions, B'machloikis Reloz of Rabbi Yochanan, in the presenting a controversy between these Amoroyim, Mosai Amrinon, Deshuyu Shitzosu Miksosa, V'nishchata HaPora, Asura Bachilo. When is it such that the partial emergence of the Shilya and subsequent slaughtering of the mother cow results in the Shilya being forbidden to be eaten? The Gemara. Amar Rebbe Elazar. This is the first version. The second version, you can see, is where the Roman numeral number 2 appears several lines later. In the middle of that line, there's a squiggle underline, Elo Iyitmar Hochi Yitmar, indicating a second version or second presentation. So the Gemara says, Amar Rebbe Elazar, Lo Shanu, Elo She'ein Imo Vlad. The halacha that's taught, this law that a partial emergence results in a prohibition of eating, this is true only if there is no child born, no offspring born. Aval yesh imo vlad, if there is a birth that results of an actual offspring, ein choshishin levlad acher, then we don't consider that this partial emerged placenta is representative of another child. In other words, that it is therefore not associated with some other birth, and hence you don't have to consider that it is part of a second birth, and therefore not covered by the shechita. If we glance in the Rabbeinu Gershom commentary, you'll find this in the lower part of the page, in the inside part of the page toward the bottom. We have a little marking indicating where we are reading. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, Amar Rebbe Elazar, Lo shanu el she'ein imo vlad, klomar, ma disnan shilyo shiyotsiso miktsos asura b'chila. That which the Mishnah taught, that the partial emergence of the placenta results in it being forbidden to be eaten, the ein shilya below vlad, because of a rule that there is no shilya without a vlad, that is limited. Ela she'eni ma vlad b'mei behema. That's a case where there is no other fetus in the slaughtered mother. Avol yesh ima vlad b'mei behema. If there is a fetus in the slaughtered mother, and you have this partially emerged placenta, ein choshishin levlad acher. You don't have to take into consideration that there is another embryo. The lo nema, we don't say afal pi sheyesh me avlad shem avlad acher yotze ima v'yotze chutz mechotzaso have im hashilya v'asura b'chila. We don't say all of this, that there may have been another vlad and this is the placenta of that other vlad, and hence this is considered a birth, a separate birth. Elavadai ki yesh me avlad. Rather, it is certain that if in our case of a slaughtered cow with a partially emerged shilya, there happens to be a fetus inside, afagav yosa shilya, even though the shilya exited partially, muteres bachila, you can eat that. The ein choshishin levlad acher. We're not concerned that maybe it's part of another vlad. Back to the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, bein ein imo vlad, bein yesh imo vlad, whether there is no other embryo or fetus, or whether there is bein yesh imo vlad, choshishin levad acher. We always consider that maybe there is another vlad, and the other vlad was in this shilya, and hence this shilya is considered part of a birth, and therefore it cannot be eaten as it represents or is considered part of another birth that's not covered by the shechita. The Gemara asks, Eini, has this presentation of the two shitas been accurate? But Rabbi Yirmiyo has been known to say, L'chumra omra Rebbe Elazar, that Rebbe Elazar appears in this machlokas as the more stringent opinion. And the way it was presented here is really presenting Rebbe Elazar as a lenient opinion, because Rebbe Elazar is giving an option in this presentation of the shilya being allowed under circumstances that Rabbi Yochanan would not allow. Elo iit mar hochi, rather, we have to present it as follows. Omer Rabbi Elazar, loi shanu, elo she'eno kshura bevlad. There, the prohibition of the partially emerged shilya is binding when the shilya is not attached to a birth. Avokshura bevlad, if it's attached to a newborn, ein choshishin levlad acher, then we understand that the shilya is not representative of another birth. It's attached to this offspring to which it is associated, and therefore there is no other birth in it. So it's considered a shilya, and hence its partial emergence is of no consequence as far as kashrus is concerned. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, onu ein lanu elo shilya belo vlad. We know that there is a prohibition, but that is only in a case of a shilya that emerges without the presence of an embryo. Avol yesh imo vlad, if there is a fetus, bein kshura bevlad, bein ein kshura bevlad, ein choshishin levlad acher. Once there is a fetus present, whether it's attached or not, even if it's not attached, we don't consider that maybe there's another vlad and it's in this shilya that emerged. According to this presentation, Rebbe Elazar comes out to be more strict, because he says that the he says that if it's not attached, if the shilia is not attached to the fetus, then you have an iser. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you can have a shilia that's not attached, and still there is no prohibition. V'hainu dom Rabbi Yirmiyah, and with this presentation, we understand that which Rabbi Yirmiyah taught, l'chumra omra Rabbi Elazar, that Rabbi Elazar represents the stricter of the two opinions. Once again, Rabbi Elazar holding that the only time there's leniency is if the vlad is attached to the shilya. However, if it's not attached, we will consider that the shilya that emerged contained another birth, and hence partial emergence represented another birth, and that's contained in this shilya, and hence it's forbidden. Rabbi Yochanan, though, once there is a fetus on the scene, even if it's not attached, the shilya that emerged is associated with it and not associated with another birth. Tanya Kavose de Rabbi Elazar. We present a Tanaic source which supports Rabbi Elazar in the sense that there is a distinction made between a attached attachment and non-attachment. Of course, attachment between shilya and vlad. Hamapeles min behemo chayva oif v'shilya imohen. A woman that has a miscarriage of a fetal miscarriage that appears strange. In other words, the looks of this fetus are not of one not having human features, but rather looking like an animal or a bird. Along with it is a shilya, a placenta. By way of background, we need to mention that which Rashi points out. This source is taught in accordance with the Shita of the Rabbanan. There is a controversy in Maseches Nida regarding this topic, but this is limited to the Shita of the Rabbanan that holds any offspring that does not have a human form to it, a human tzura, is not considered a birth. Birth in the case of human beings entails what's called Yemei Tuma Vitara. In the case of a male birth, there are 7 days of Tuma that the woman, the mother, experiences, followed by 33 days of Tahara, where we say that any blood that comes from the mother is not of a Tomei nature. If it's a female birth, then there are 14 days of Tuma, followed by 66 days of Tahara. This source, in accordance with Rabbanan, is teaching a woman who miscarried something that did not have a human form, but there is also a shilya present. So the source goes on to teach us, Bizman Shikshura Bohen, if these odd-looking miscarriages are attached to this shilya, Ein Choshishin Levlad Acher. We don't take into consideration that there may have been another vlad, and as a result of that, this woman would not experience any tumas leida. As far as we're concerned, there is no room for considering another birth. The only birth is this strange-looking miscarriage, and hence it does not entail any tumas leida. However, eino kshura bohen, if the strange-looking miscarriages came out, and in addition a shilya emerged, but the shilya was not attached to them, hareini matil oleo choymer shnei vlodois. We apply to this woman the stringencies of two births. Shani oymer, as we will say, the halacha will say, we should, before going on, let's just mention the stringency of two births means, practically speaking, that this woman will experience 14 days of Tuma without any days of Tahara. Now, how do we get to that conclusion? Shani Omer, Shema Nimoach Shvir Shel Shilya. The Shilya that came out may have had in it a regular, a full-fledged human form, but it dissolved. As a result of that, the full-fledged human form that may have been in there may have been, in fact, a female birth. That will impose a 14-day tuma period. On the other hand, shema nimocha shilyoso shel shvir. It could be that the shilya of this odd-looking birth that was not attached to the shilya, that its shilya, let us say, it dissolved, and that's nimocha shilyosa shel shvir, and there is no other vlad except for this odd-looking birth, and as such, there is no there are no yemei tahara to be observed either. The point of bringing this source in was to demonstrate that there is a distinction made between a shilya that's attached to the fetus as opposed to a shilya that's not attached. And this distinction was characteristic of Rabbi Lozer's approach, not Rabbi Yochanan's. Hamevakeres shipila. We spoke about in the Mishnah an animal bearing its firstborn, and we said that if it's mapil, a shilya, the shilya can be thrown to the dogs. My taima, why is it? Why is it that you throw it to the dogs and don't take into consideration that maybe it contained within it a firstborn b'chor, which has sanctity to it, and that which has sanctity certainly cannot be thrown to the dogs. Omar of Iko, Breder of Ami, Roiv Behemos, Yoldois, Dovar HaKadosh Bevechora, Umiut Behemos, Dovar She'eno Kadosh Bevechora, Umai Nihu, Nidme. That means that most animals will give birth to something that potentially would be a Bechor. That would mean that the birth is of a creature that looks like its parents. In other words, you would expect two sheep that mate, they produce a lamb. However, there are odd cases where an animal comes out from its parents that looks like something else. And that's a nidme. For example, if two sheep mate and they give birth to something that looks like a goat, that is not kadosh b'kedushas b'chor. So that there is a mute of possibilities. There's a minority of births that Rashi uses a very interesting word. He calls it counterfeit, something that's may look like, but it's not the real thing. So in this case, it looks like something else. It looks like a goat, but it's not a real goat because it's coming from sheep parents. So since that figures in the realm of births, the Gemara continues, V'chol ha-yoldos, yoldos mechza zechor mechza nekevus, and of all births, 50% are male and 50% are female. Smoich mi'uta denidme, lemechza denekevus, attach the minority of nidme births to the 50% that are female, v'havaluhu zechorem miuta. So from the sum total of all births, the normal male birth would be the minority. So given a case where we have a doubt, and that's like our case of the shilya that emerged from a mivakeres, an animal bearing its first offspring, the chances of it being something that would be, let's say, a healthy or a normal zohar are in the minority. It's a mute, and therefore we go according to the majority of possibilities, and that leads us to the conclusion that it would not be b'kedushas b'chor, and hence can be thrown to the dogs. Uvamukdoshim tikover, the shilya that comes from a sacrificial animal, that has to be buried. My taimo, why do we treat it with sanctity? Rubo bar mikdosh hu. The majority of births, in this case we have the male and females, those are something that are subject to sanctity. So that which is born from a sanctified animal, if it were male or female, it would have sanctity, and hence this shilya must be treated in accordance with that. The ein kovrin osa. We mentioned in the Mishnah, it's not to be buried at a crossroads. The shilya shouldn't be buried at a crossroads. Abai and Rava mitravayu. Abai and Rava both say, they give us a rule. Kol davar, shiyesh boi refua, ein bo mishum darke hemori. Things that are of a remedy nature. For example, certain types of liquids, drinks, or medicines, or even certain types of incantations, sayings that are designed to offer healing when someone is ill, and even a certain type of saying is recited, that is acceptable, that's legitimate, and it's not called darkei omori, the ways of the idol worshippers or the Gentiles. However, ein bo refua, if something that's done is not associated with healing, Rashi says the second line from the bottom, ein bo mishum refua kagon she'oisin shelo al hacholi, something done when it's not in the presence of an illness, kagon kvuras shili precious drachim, like the burial of a placenta at a crossroads, v'chayotzi bohem shedoymin lenichush, other practices that look like the practice of sorcery. So that type of behavior is yeshbo mishum darki hamori, comes under the prohibition known as the ways of the Amorites, darki hamori, and we mentioned in the Mishnah that is alluded to by the pasuk that says velo sase kemasehem, you shall not practice like the nations that were in Israel before the Jews came in. The Gemara asks a question that takes us to the top of Ayin Ches Amar Aleph, the Hatanya. But have we not learned in a Brisa, Ilon Shemeshe Peroisov, a tree that's shedding its fruits prematurely, Soikro Besikro V'Toyanoi Ba'avonim, you paint the tree, you paint the trunk red, and load up on it stones. So Bishlam Otana Ba'avonim, the practice of loading up stones on the roots of the tree, that I can understand. Ki hechi the nikhush chele, this would serve to weaken the strength of the tree. In other words, we're dealing with a tree that seems to have too much virility to it, in the sense that it's casting off its fruits before they mature. It has a lot of force in it, so the piling of stones will deflect or will absorb the forces of the tree, and hence its fruits will be left on till maturation, will remain on till maturation. Ella sokro besikra amai, what in the world does the painting of the tree red have to do with solving the situation? Therefore, it looks to us that the painting of the tree is something to do with darkei ha'amori, something not associated with the healing. The Gemara answers, the painting of the tree is not darkei ha'amori. Rather, ki hechi de lechziua inshi, it will attract the attention of the passers-by. Lechziua, they'll see inshi. People will see the red paint. The levi rachami uluyo. And that will alert people to pray for it, to pray for the tree's health. In other words, you have someone who's losing money on his tree investment, and with the people becoming aware of the problem, they will pray for its remedy. Kidisanya, we have a Tanaic source that reflects this. This deals with a person who is a Metzora, and as such he's cast out of the community until his skin problem leaves, and the Kohen declares him to be Tohar. So the Pasuk referring to this poor chap says, V'tomei tomei yikra, he screams out and announces that he is Tomei. And we learn from this, Tzorech lehodia l'rabim, he has to announce his problem to the public, v'rabim evakshin olav rachamim, and the public will pray for his benefit. V'chein mishi rabo dover, similarly, anyone that some misfortune befell them, Tzorech lehodia l'rabim, they have to inform the public, v'rabim evakshin olav rachamim, and the public will pray for his benefit, pray for mercy for him. Similarly, the painting of the tree red will arouse the public's concern and their prayers. Omar Avino, Keman Talinun Kuvza Bedikla. Based on whom do we follow this practice of hanging a cluster of dates on a date tree? This serves as a sign that the tree is shedding its fruit early. So, and when you have a tree that sheds its fruit prematurely, there Ravina reflects upon a practice of hanging a cluster of dates on such a tree. Keman, based on whom is this? Ki Hai Tana. It's based on this Tanaic source that says that things are done to draw public awareness to a problem, and they will pray for its remedy. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.